Welcome to John Wayne Lied to You, the storytelling podcast featuring me, your fast and loose honey boost goose, damn it, something else about being loose, John Wayne. That's right, here I am once again in the Library of Evil, nestled in the east wing of Wayne Manor. The air is thick with Grandpappy's medicine, of course, as always. I have a nice fresh heaping pipe of it, and you know, and I've been pumping it into the air so far this morning, and I think that all systems are go and we are good. I've got some coffee. I'm ready. Thank you again for joining me for another episode this week. If you're new to the podcast, I especially thank you for checking it out. This is I just did a year of episodes, celebrated a year, so there's, you know, I think this is episode 54 or 55 that I'm doing right now, so there's plenty of other ones to go back and listen to and check out if you are into this and want to catch up. Not that there's really anything to catch up on, because there's no linearness to any of these episodes. They're just stories. So, yeah, so welcome, guys. This has been a very good week, I think. Again, another kind of busy one, but a little bit of time to lay back than I've had in the last few weeks. So yeah, like there was no day job on Monday, so I had a nice pretty much 4-day weekend because I didn't work on Friday or Monday. I didn't play over this past weekend either. Or wait, did we? No, we didn't play. Yeah, so I had that weekend, last weekend, and this weekend that we just had off. Yeah, so it's interesting. So then Tuesday and Wednesday, I was supposed to be meeting with Tuesday I did have a meeting. Maybe. What was Tuesday? What did we do on Tuesday? F and Rager. Ned and Connor's F and Rager. I knew I did something. Yeah, I went and checked out Ned and Connor's show, F and Rager. As you know, last week I was on their show, FM Rager, which is a radio show, allegedly, because it's online. We had this whole conversation. I know it was called HD Radio, which is online, but it's not a podcast. It's radio. Whatever you guys say, that's fine. I was there. I had a blast. And the show that they did at PJ's on Tuesday was hilarious. They did some, they actually filmed like a 3D video. It was very, very cool. Passed out 3D glasses, which I thought was a sham. I thought that they were just tricking us into all putting these glasses on so we look like idiots. But no, it was actually like they actually filmed a 3D sequence, and it was very cool. Check those guys out. F and Rager is their handle on Instagram, and I know they're putting all their videos and stuff up there and their YouTube channel, F and Rager. So it's EFFINRAGER, F and, like, you know, you want to say fucking, but you're too much of a giant pussy. So that's right, I said it, and I'm not sorry. Anyway. Yeah, so that was a great show. Check out F and Rager if you're in town and you haven't been to it. It's a very, very funny comedy kind of variety show that my buddies Ned and Connor put on, and it's the second Tuesday of every month, so check that out. Then I Wednesday and Thursday I was, you know, supposed to meet up with Nick P for our usual writing session for the week, but he had some stuff come up, some family things he had to take care of, so I was just freeballing it, you know, pretty much by myself. And you know, while I had this free time, I was still working. I was working on my own stuff. I finished a story to submit. I did that like Monday night or no, Wednesday night. I was like really, I spent a few hours getting this story done so that I could send it in, because it had to be sent in by midnight. And it got accepted, thank you. But I was still working on stuff, but I've been having this feeling of like an unfocusedness for some reason, or a diverted focus, or a confused focus, maybe, if that's the best way to describe it, because I don't know. It's like I'll sit down and start doing my stuff, and I'm finding myself jumping off to different tangents more often than usual. And by that I mean, like, you know, jumping over to, you know, I'll be writing my work in progress or whatever, I'll bang out like 200 words and then be like, oh, I forgot I gotta post this about this coming up. And I jump over and I do that. And then it's not like I get I'm not someone that gets sucked down the rabbit hole of social media when I get on there. Like, it's not something that I feel necessarily keeps me from doing my work, because I don't really get on there and start looking at anything. But my main focus is, like, my concern is, like, oh, I just remembered I need to post that. Oh, I need to put this up. While I'm, you know what, I should be doing this. And then I jump over to the website and I'll update something there. And I don't know why. It's just a weird diversion of focus. So I was trying to make that a focus. There's a lot of focusing going on here today when I, you know, kind of talked out the week. And yeah, so that was good. Thursday, did I go out on Thursday too? I think I did. Yes, Thursday. No, didn't go out Thursday, but Friday I did. And Katie and I, my fiance, she got a promotion and all that kind of good stuff. Very excited for her. So we went out to celebrate and ended up going to like five different places throughout the evening, which is fun. And I was at the secret group because it was emo night and I wanted to go listen to the emo music and look sad. And I got to do that and it was great. And we went to a bunch of other places and she had a ball and I'm very proud of her and excited for her to take on her new role in her job. Plugging away, she's in the real world of working, which I am not, quote unquote real world, whatever. I love her and respect her so much. She's doing a great job. So congratulations to her. And then, you know, Saturday, last night, I got tattooed by my friend Dana over at Edo Tattoo. It's a new tattoo shop that just opened. I wanted to go check it out. Dana if you follow my story, I put her on my story yesterday on Instagram or I guess the day before, but her name is Octoberose, B-O-R-O-S, Octoberose, at Octoberose if you want to follow her tattoo journey. So I went over there to check out the shop and, you know, I was like, I've been wanting, you know, I've been getting the itch for a tattoo, but just haven't had the time. So I wanted to go check the shop out and I was like, hey, you know, give me an Alkaline Trio heart, which I wanted. And then she touched up my inside of my fingers, the 13 I had on there, because some of it fell out. That's a hard place to keep tattoo, is inside of your hands. The ink falls out a lot and it's a tougher area, I guess, to press the ink in. So she touched that up for me too, and it was cool. So it's pretty much a packed like weekend. And then, dudes, all right, I really have to give like huge respect and shouts out to this and this person, Kiki Maroon. She is a performer here in Houston, supremely talented burlesque performer, and she's a stand-up comedian. But not only is she talented in those regions, she produces these huge shows. She has this mind to see all of this, you know, the big picture of a huge production, right? And God damn if she does not pull it off just with like flawlessly. It's really incredible to watch. I went, you know, I've known Kiki for a long time, met her back like years ago when I used to do another podcast when she was just starting these shows, I feel like. And I went to, you know, I've been to a lot of her shows and they're always great. But man, just see, like, the show I went to last night was pretty goddamn amazing. All the acts were, it was a comedy and burlesque show called Kiki's Comic Strip. And so they had burlesque dancers and, you know, comedians in between kind of all the burlesque acts. And all the acts were kind of based on like a pop culture nerdy type thing. So, and these performers were from all over the country, from LA, Portland, somewhere else, you know, a lot of places. But there was a one woman did a cat, like a Catwoman thing, and it was fucking amazing. There was a Star Wars one that was badass. In Kiki's finale, that it was a giant, she basically bathed in cotton candy and champagne to some spin sugar was playing. It was just dizzying. I was overwhelmed. My senses were on high alert. I was just like, wow, this is just amazing. So you know, she puts together these shows, she produces them. I mean, this is at a big venue, Warehouse Live, and I know she's got a lot of great people that work for her, like my good friend Paige. Shouts out Paige. She cuts my hair, she keeps me looking good, she's one of my best friends, and she is very integral in helping Kiki with these shows as well, as she has a lot of other great people who help her. But I just have to say, major respect to her, because she is the backbone of that. She's driving that, and it is so cool to see, and it's so awesome to see her being so successful at it. So check out Kiki Maroon on all social media, KIKIMAROON, at Kiki Maroon. You will not be disappointed. And if you're in Houston, come to one of these shows. She has a monthly show at Warehouse Live. This one was different. They're usually called the Burly Q, and it's more of a variety show. I was on one of those. I'll be on another one September 14th, I believe. I'll be performing, and I cannot wait. But come to that show, or come to the one in August if you're in the Houston area, because it is a show you don't want to miss. And if not, check out, just follow Kiki. She's got a lot of videos, and there's a lot of content that she puts out there that's amazing. So I just wanted to say that and give her some props, because she deserves them. And that was a great show I had last night. It helped them load out some stuff. And then, you know, Uncle Johnny said, bye, I'm out. I'm a ghost, baby. And I just went home and just chilled here, and just, you know, I was out super late the night before, which came home and unwound a little bit, you know, visited a grandpappy's medicine stores and just chilled out. And now here we are today for a fine, fine day of storytelling and adventure. Also, I want to, before I get going on our tarot reading and stuff today, I have to pump some books up that I read that I finished this week. One was Cock Block by C.V. Hunt, and the other one was Irrationalia by Anderson Prunty. Now, these are both Grindhouse books. Of course, you know, I'm on Grindhouse as well, so I, you know, this, there's no nepotism here. Those just came out, and I bought them and devoured them pretty quick. And who cares? Nepotism, whatever. These are awesome books, and these are fantastic fucking writers. Cock Block is... Man, I mean, Carrie writes these... Every time she writes something new, I'm like, how's she going to top this one? And this is such a cool story where it's got this... I hate to say zombie feel, because I think that puts not only the wrong image in people's head of, like, what this is actually about, but zombie, I think now, it's been so overused and people do it all the time. I think zombie's almost a bad word in horror writing these days, I guess. But it's such a unique take on something like that, like an outbreak of some kind happening that only affects men, and then the women are, you know, fighting against it and trying to, you know, take back over and get it stopped. And it's really interesting the way she writes it through the lens that made me stop and think. I guess I don't, you know, do I not think about that enough? Like, it must be so crazy being a girl. Just those kind of things I'm just in this book are... It's a great book. It's great, fucking wonderfully written, great story, great scathing social commentary. It is fantastic. Check out Cock Block by C.V. Hunt. And then, of course, Irrationalia by Anderson Prunty. You know, Andy is one of my favorites, has been one of my favorites for years now. And this book... Again, it's like his signature. I wrote a review on it, and they called him a sadistic genius. But I mean that like that's a compliment. I mean, he takes this trope of like these kids experience something in the woods when they're young, something supernatural, and then they're basically all coming together in their adult life because of this thing. And you're seeing through like flashbacks and memories of them, like what happened to bring them back here. And man, he just has this way of just twisting all of those things and making it so bizarre and so unexpected. And I love it. I love that style. I love his style of the story. So Irrationalia is his new one. Cock Block, C.V. Hunt's new one. Both on Grindhouse Press. Check those out. Those are my recommendations of the week. And if you get those, you might as well get Scummer, my new book, because you're already getting that book, so why not, you know? I do have the stores all stocked up on johnwinisdead.com on the shop page, so if you order one You get a personalized copy and, you know, some other goodies I'll throw in there, and a kiss and a hug and all my love. So some people have ordered them from the store already this week, and I thank you. But, you know, if you want one from me, get it. If not, you know, get it online while you're getting, you know, Andy and Carrie's book. So, yeah, so those are my recommendations of the week. Now, moving on to our tarot reading for this week. As you know, I do a 3-card tarot reading on every week on myself before the show and share it with you. Again, it's a nice thought exercise for me. It helps me think about things going on in my life and how I can think differently about them based on, like, you know, what these cards are. So I enjoy it. I hope you do too. And we'll get started here. Now today, like I say, like I'm always trying to think about something going on while I'm shuffling up the cards, just getting mentally in the right headspace. And I was thinking about how I mentioned earlier, you know, my focus. I feel like I need to refocus on something. I don't know if it's because maybe I just don't have a big project right now, or what I consider a big project. You know, I've finished, you know, another book that's, you know, been sent in, and so I haven't started another long work, but man, I've written a shit ton of short stories like in the last few weeks. And I don't know if that's bugging me and that's why I don't feel, or maybe I just don't feel focused because I'm not working on a big piece. And like, you know, we got the record out in the band and all that kind of stuff, and that's done. And that was a big focus of getting that pushed through, and now it's done. And I don't, maybe it's like kind of like the loss of like two having large things that I was focusing on. Now I have all this focus that I need to put somewhere else, so I maybe feel a little bit lost with it, if that makes sense. So that's what I was thinking about while I was shuffling up the cards today. And I'll tell you this, I shuffled the shit out of these cards. I'm not fucking around. You know, it's kind of like a ritual. You know, I'll cut them several times, shuffle, shuffle, cut, shuffle. I'll shuffle half the deck into another half and then cut it. I don't mess around when it comes to shuffling. All right, buddies and friends. But let me tell you this. Last week, the reading first card was the Death card. Yesterday, I was just in here in the library writing, you know, I did a reading just taking a break. First card I pulled was the Death card. Today, this morning, I shuffle up, do the reading. First card on the reading is the Death card. So I'm like, that's fucking weird. And as we've said before, as I've said, you know, death card doesn't mean death. My friend Milo, shouts out Milo, was wearing a shirt with the Death card on it when we were at Poison Girl on Friday night, and I went off like I was, you know, I maybe was a little bit, I was carrying a couple packages by that point, you know, had a couple, and I go on this like long explanation about the Death card to him and what it really means and like all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. And then I started thinking about, like, that's another instance that this Death card has appeared in my life within a week. It's kind of weird. So I don't think it means anything bad, but I think, like, just to, okay, recapping, like, so the Death card, it means, you know, rebirth. It's the end of something and the beginning of something new. So it's a positive card to have. It's showing that you're, you know, you're ready to move into this new thing that's happening and embrace this change. You know, death is not stoppable. You know, the card represents that. Everybody succumbs to death. It doesn't matter. Like I mentioned on the card, there's the bishop and a man and a woman and a child. And it's showing that, like, all of them are subject to death regardless of your place in life. And I think that's just like saying that everything must, like, I don't, it will pass away or change. Nothing is going to stay constant. And, you know, and sometimes it's just time for things to die and you move on to something else. So, you know, this card asks you to be welcoming to this new change, to let go of old habits or things that are holding you back, and let go of all unhealthy attachments. So I was thinking about that, you know, is something new coming in that I'm not being welcoming to? Is there something in my peripheral that I'm not even noticing right now that I should be thinking more about, or something like that. That's what I'm thinking right now, is that I need to find out what that is. What am I ending? What am I not seeing I need to begin on? You know what I mean? I sat here, that's the note I put to myself. What am I not starting? What am I not starting? What am I supposed to start that I'm not starting? That's what I feel like I keep getting this card for, maybe. So that was like weird. It was a little weird, coincidental, but you know, sometimes I think things mean things sometimes, you know, like when all those ladies at the airport had my same birthday when I was traveling. That was weird. But anyway, next card I draw, King of Swords. So this card represents intellectual power and authority. It says with courage, and it has courage and intellect to accomplish all he desires. So this card is like one of those, it deals heavily with intellect and not emotion, and it tells you, for you to be detached and objective when you're dealing with a decision or a situation that you're looking at. So I thought about that because I have a hard time not being emotional about everything. I don't know. You know, it's very hard for me to make a detached, objective decision because I get so wrapped up and passionate and emotional, and I use my heart instead of my brain to make decisions, and I know that's a bad trait. That's the kind of manager I was when I worked at Starbucks. I managed with my heart more than my head, and I couldn't really change that, and I didn't want to, so I just kind of went with it, and I made it work, but, you know, I'm not very good at this, at being objective like that, but I think I need to be. It says, remain detached, objective, get to the truth, and only the facts. Use intellect to prove your point and succeed. Use your observations, thoughts, history, and experience to solve problems. So, that's very important to... when talking about being objective, to look back. I try to look back at situations like, this is kind of like when I did this, or this is, you know, if a friend is doing something, that's kind of like when so-and-so did that. They did this, maybe I should do this instead. Like, I really try to think about those things. But one thing that this made me think about, you know, it's use your observations, thoughts, history. I've been trying to be more aware of not introducing negativity into a situation, even if it's a funny remark, because I find that I started thinking about that for some reason, that you know when you like have something, maybe a group or something like that, and somebody's like constantly dropping the ball on what they're doing or whatever, and maybe you're like, oh wow, Mildred's late again, you know, oh, she couldn't be on time, or you know, you're just like, wow, I guess that clock we bought Mildred didn't work, or those kind of comments. I mean, those are bad examples or very light examples, but that's the kind of thing I was doing, like making these offhanded comments that I thought were funny, but they're also jabby. They're not, either way, they're not they don't get anything done. They're not it's a fucking word I'm looking for. So you're yelling words into the phone right now, or into the radio, the podcast radio, guys. And it's not helpful to anything. It doesn't do any good. So I thought about that when I read this part of the card, and I'm gonna try to do that. I'm gonna just keep my mouth shut and not say anything negative. And if I do say something about a situation, I want to make sure I say something that's a problem-solving remark. Or, you know, or maybe we should talk, you know, be more communicative about our feelings about things or performance or whatever. That's very important. you are able to identify limiting behaviors getting in your way. I wrote this down because, and then I wrote next to it, resistance. That's something like I've been trying to hyper focus on, is resistance, and I spoke about it a couple weeks ago. But if you read the book The War of Art, and it is by Steven Stephen something, the War of Art, it's a great book about figuring out the things that are keeping you from achieving what you are trying to do, i.e. your dreams or a new path in life, you know, or putting the work into something that requires a lot of work, like writing or learning an instrument or learning a career or whatever, and figuring out what's keeping you from doing that and how to stop that. And so resistance is what he calls it, and that's what I took from this. Like, you know, I need to identify, I'm trying to identify those things that are causing me to be that are resistance to me. And it doesn't all have to be bad stuff. See, that's the thing that I've been thinking is like, man, you know, there are forms of resistance that happen that aren't anything typical that you would think, like, i.e. when I mentioned about jumping from what you're writing to the internet, and then you get on Facebook, and then you start getting pulled down, and that's a form of resistance. You're doing that instead of what you're supposed to be doing, and you need to like remove that if that's a problem. Same thing with you know, I look at it sometimes as like going out. Am I going out too much sometimes? You know, when I sit down, I've started to write. If someone texts me or Katie comes home, is like, hey, let's go grab a beer, that's a good thing. Of course I want to go have a beer with my lady. But that is a form of resistance, because instead of saying like, I could say yes, but give me like 30 more minutes to finish what I'm working on, which would be fine, or I promised myself I would do this, so I can't drink tonight, but let's make a date for tomorrow to go out, like something like that, that's the resistance I'm not necessarily picking up on, that I need to be more perceptive of. And my own things that, you know, sometimes I'll get in my head like, oh, you know what, before I sit down to start, I need to reorganize the closet, and I don't need to do that. You know, just things like that, where it's resistance, and I'm trying to recognize those things and keep them out. I wrote down a note for me, is like, I need to be more detached and impartial when making decisions. Like I said, I'm too emotional in my decisions, and I think that that's something pretty valuable to work on. So, moving on, the third card, the Star. I think this card bookends this reading pretty well, and I'll tell you why as we go through it. The Star represents renewed hope and faith. You're truly blessed by the universe at this time. It represents courage, fulfillment, inspiration, calm, stable, you have a deep understanding of yourself and those around you. So this renewed hope, faith, and something new that's coming right here. A brighter future is waiting if you trust and believe it is possible. This made me think of like how the Death card at the beginning is saying like, there's this change coming. It's coming. This whole thing is dead. It's coming. The change is coming. You can't stop it. Denying it's only going to make it worse, or putting it off is going to make it worse. And this is where I look like, you know, this is a better future is waiting if you trust and believe. So to get from the Death card to this card is like a matter of letting go of that to get to what the new thing is, and the start of the birth of the new thing. Hate, envy, bitterness, revenge no longer shadow your life. For the most part, I can say that. You know, I get a little heated at some things sometimes. But time, for me, it's a time thing. You know, I get over it after a few days. I no longer want to, you know, lash out at maybe those old people that yelled at me on stage. You know, I don't care anymore. Of course, a couple days after, you know, I want to find them and just, like, destroy their lives in some way. But, yeah, I'm over it. This is a card of personal transformation, renewed sense of meaning, inspiration, and purpose. Trust your inner voice and the universe. And this also went with the Death card, I felt, because it's a matter of letting go so that you can find this transformation, renewed sense of meaning. I put, for me, it's like let go of not knowing. Sometimes I get hung up on wanting to know something I don't know the answer to, like, I'll obsess over it, you know, just like things like, you know, number things when it comes to the arts, like book sales, visibility, all those things. Like sometimes I just, you can't figure those things out, or I waste too much time trying to. I need to let go of not knowing that, stay the course, don't get cute, don't get smart, don't change what I'm doing, because it's already been it's been working. I don't need to reinvent anything. Stop trying to think about all this crazy shit that I have no control over, and stay the course. So that's it, and that's that. That's the reading for today. I feel pretty cool about that. I mean, getting that death card 3 times in a row is kind of interesting. It's not off-putting to me, but it was interesting. It definitely makes me think more and focus on some stuff maybe that I'm not. So there you go. So there is that, and we will just move right along into our story for this week. This is one diving back into the old past of John Wayne. Past of John Wayne, probably when my voice was cracking as a freshman in high school. So we will call this story The Taming of the Shrew in My Pants. So, as I've mentioned before, I was a theater brat growing up, a theater kid, if you will. All through, you know, I started it in seventh grade, towards the middle of seventh grade, I kind of got into it. And then, that was the first play I got into. It's called Heading for a Wedding. And it wasn't a Tony Award winner or anything, but it was a middle school play. What do you want? I think I had like 2 lines. Anyway, so I got really into that, and I started doing, you know, the speech tournaments, which are, you know, if you don't know, that's where you go and compete. There's like the debate happens, then there's the oral interpretation, which sounds very naughty, but it's just, you know, you doing a monologue or a piece, like a dramatic piece or a humorous piece, and you're acting them out, and people are judging you because they really want to ram it into your head from a young age that, you know, art's a competition, of course. So let's compete against each other. but I loved it. I did that. All duets, all those things. Like, it was a great, it was my jam. That's what I did. And I'm still a performer to this day. So I guess I was doing something right. But this story is from my freshman year in high school. So I'm this is a big transition to go from middle school to high school. You know, it's a nerve-wracking thing. And then when you're in something like, I imagine, like a sport or anything else competitive, like theater, there's something almost of like a fuck, you know, you maybe everyone knew you in middle school to be like the actor or whatever, but now you have to reprove yourself. There's people coming from different schools, not just your school, and there's all these like 3 years of people ahead of you that are doing the same thing. So you kind of have to try to make your mark. I was fortunate enough to have done well enough, I guess, to get cast in I believe it was the first or second play of the season. And it was called The Taming of the Shrew by William Shakespeare. So if you don't know what Taming of the Shrew is about, I'm trying to remember as best I can. It's Shakespeare. It's about this woman, and she's like, I guess she's a complete bitch, but she needs to be married off so that her dad, I think the king, can do something. Or anyway, they hire this guy that he's going to come along, and he's supposed to basically tame the shrew, seduce her, calm her down, marry her, or whatever, so something else can happen. If you know more about it, I'm sure you're probably like, you are a fucking idiot. And I know I am. But the plot of the play is not what's important in this story. So Shakespeare is not, it's not one of my favorite things to read or watch. I think back in when I was in high school and stuff, I convinced myself that I liked Shakespeare because I was, you know, I wanted to be an actor, and I was doing plays, and Shakespeare is supposed to be, you know, Shakespeare, so you're supposed to think it's great and genius. So, but, you know, I just, I was just fooling myself, I think, because I don't fucking give a shit about Shakespeare. I'm sorry. Like, I've been in other plays. I was in Midsummer Night's Dream. That's, of course, a great classic and whatnot, but I don't need to ever fucking see it again, you know? It's just not my thing. I don't like all the talk. I don't like this iambic weird. I don't like that. But back then I did, I guess, or thought I did. So I'm in this play. I'm just speaking now how I feel about it. If you love it, great. It's not for me. So I'm in Taming of the Shrew, and I am Hortensio. I wish I remembered what Hortensio did or what his role was, but I don't. I don't remember what he was supposed to do, but he was a guy, and he was involved in some way. So, and this was a, you know, we were doing this traditionally Shakespeare-wise. The director of this play was Mr. Hart. Shouts out, if he's still around. He was an awesome guy. He also taught tech theater at my school, and so he built all the sets and shit for all the plays. But he also directed, and I think that he and the main theater teacher, Miss Green, would switch off directing the plays for the year. So, like, he'd do one, she'd do one, and this was one of his. So Shakespeare, and this is also one of my first experiences with true wardrobe for a show. You know, shows in middle school, you're not, I mean, they're not busting out the huge budget to bring in all this. It's just like, whose mom has some cool shit they can sew, or who owns a cape from Halloween that we can use. That was how it was there, but now, apparently, this is way more involved, because Mr. Hart brings in this guy who was a former student of his, who I think had maybe graduated the year prior, so maybe he was just out, or 2 years prior, and he was starting up a costuming service, or a costume business, mainly for the Renaissance Fair, which is a big thing out here. I guess they're a big thing all over the place. It's another thing I'm not super into, or into at all. But, you know, it's very popular. A lot of people love it. And he was trying to make costumes. This guy, whose name was Russ. That's it. He was coming in to make the costume. So he comes in. Mr. Hart introduces him to us. He kind of tells him a little about himself and how he went to school here with Mr. Hart, and he's starting this business, blah, 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 whatever. And he's going to be pulling us out, like, you know, throughout the rehearsal that day for measurements and stuff. So we go along, we're doing that, measuring, and, you know, we're kind of like, what are the costumes going to be like? And he has these sketches and stuff that he's kind of showing us, like, what the basic design is going to be. And it's all the classic Shakespeare style, I guess. A lot of, like, bright colors and things. But one of the main factors of each costume was tights. So right away, you know, myself at least, and maybe some of the other guys are like, are we going to be wearing tights? And he's like, no, you'll have these, you know, these pieces of these, like, you know, balloony pants, like pantaloons that come down or some shit to your knee, and, you know, they're tight around your knees, and then just all basically just your calves show, and you're wearing some, you know, creepy shoes or that they make you buy from Capezio or something like that. So that was the costumes. Like, oh, okay, but we'll be covered, right? We're not just wearing tights. Yes, you'll be covered, no problem. You know, no, you're not going to just be in tights. So We start doing the production of the show throughout rehearsals and such. We start getting down to the end of it. By that, I mean where we're doing, like, only full run-throughs. We'll do, like, two or three a day, maybe, with notes in between. And, oh, also, we'll need some dress rehearsals in there. But we have no dress. Russ has not been as, I guess, honest or forthcoming and communicative as he could be. He did come back at one point in the middle of production, and he brought some costume pieces that he was working on, but they weren't really done necessarily, and I think he took some of them, left some of them. But we're getting down to it, and we're like, where the fuck are the costumes? And Mr. Hart basically has to tell us that he doesn't know what is going on. Russ won't return his calls, but he already has our money, so he's trusting that he's just working hard on them or something like that. And of course, that's never what's fucking going on. I personally think he took all this money and just went on a bender. and then was like, ah, shit, how am I going to do this? How am I going to make these costumes? And I don't know exactly what transpired. That was my thought, but we really were days away going into this show with Mr. Hart telling us, you know, the show must go on, so we will just have to figure it out. If we have to go buy body suits or whatever, if we have to do whatever, we'll figure it out. But the show is going on with or without these costumes. It's like, fuck. Anyway, in like the 11th hour, Russ shows up. Day of the show, like afternoon, he's there, he's got costumes, he's working on stuff, but nothing is really put together. Like, you know, some of them are done. I think like some of the dresses were done mainly for the girls in the play. But we get down to like us, and all he has for us, the guys, are tights and like this kind of vest piece that was supposed to go on top of like a puffy type shirt or something like that. And but no shirt, but that's all he has. Like some people have a little bit more piecemeal, but nobody has the pants. We are just straight in tights, dude. And that's fine. But back then, you know, I'm like, what, 14, 15 years old, I think. You know, we talked about the Korean spa, and I had to be naked naked guys in front of each other. But still, that's just guys. Now you're talking about you want me to walk out on stage in front of all these people in just tights. Like, I'm definitely not secure enough for that at this point in my life. So I remember being really upset about that and just being like, man, fuck, this sucks. And then I was like, I was wearing boxer shorts. They were white with blue vertical stripes. And I was just like, I'm not taking off my boxer shorts. And he was like, I remember him being like, he's like, I think you have to because, and I was like, no, I'm not. And he's like, all right, fine, whatever. So I put tights on over my boxer shorts. And, you know, if you think you have a panty line, ladies, it was weird looking. Not only that, it's frumpy and weird, and you could see the boxers through the tights, especially when the stage lights hit them. So that was great. My buddy, the Monsignor, was in this play, and whoever he was had a cape and like a walking stick. So he just wore his cape all the way around him, like and hunched over, kind of, so it just fell in front of him, and he just looked like he was a walking cape, so you didn't have to see him in his tights. But otherwise, the rest of us is just like we had to do it. And as soon as you walked out, I remember titter laughter of like, oh shit, they're in tights. And plus, my tights, guys, let me tell you this. I am Hortensio. For some reason, his colors were pink, so I'm wearing pink tights, a pink vest thing. One of my own white, like V-neck Hanes undershirts or whatever. And that's it. That's my costume for the fucking opening night of this goddamn play. And we did it. I mean, I don't even know how present I was during that performance, just because I was really focused on how uncomfortable I was being in tights in front of all these people. And how, what a fucking son of a bitch Russ was for not, you know, fucking doing our fucking costumes, and then how Mr. Hart could let this happen. I'm like, man, you can't just go down there and bust some heads, you know, Jesus Christ, we don't even have pants. So, you know, that was all going through my head. But we got through it, and then it turns out, I guess Russ, like, you know, he methed up or something and stayed up all night and day, and by the next evening's performance, he had the pants done enough for us to wear, which he then finished them again the next day and all this kind of stuff. So it was a big fucking hassle, man. You know, I look back on it, I don't even think that play was that great, to be quite honest with you. For whatever reason, okay, there's like there's a competition, like UIL's one-act play competition, which is, you know, with all the schools and shit like that, and it's really legit, and because, you know, UIL controls all the sports and all the competitions. And instead of having like instead of having picked a one act play and one of the directors is cast it and does it, they just decided to make the Taming of the Shrew the one act play for that year. And Mr. Hart does this like massive cut to it, because you've got to get it down to 40 minutes, or you cannot go over 40 minutes, not even 1 second, or you're disqualified. And that was our one act play. And I was like, you know, I'm a freshman. I've never done one act play before. So I'm like, I'm just excited to do it. I'm excited that I'm doing one act play. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I was like, this is cool. I don't even have to audition again for another show. I'm already in the show. Excellent. You know, I don't. And then we went to the first round and we watched, like, we did our play, whatever. And I was watching the other plays and I was like, what the fuck are we doing? Who thought it was a good idea for us to do this show to compete with people? We are awful. This is terrible. Like, I was like, so I kind of felt not betrayed, because I'm sure that wasn't, there was no, like, I just felt like, why did our directors think that this would work? Anyway, I felt like it was a square peg round hole type situation. Like, they really wanted a Shakespeare play to work for the one act play, and it just didn't, and I don't think it does. But yeah, so I think we were eliminated right away, you know, no big deal. But I did go on, after that, you know, my next years doing one act play. We did Picnic, we did Dancing at Lunacy, and we got close. I did my senior year, we got one before finals, and it was like, it was just so close, but so far away. And that was it. But I haven't worn tights on stage in that capacity before, but I will say, like, when Letters to Voltron, years ago, was in one of its iterations. Letters to Voltron is an old band I used to play in, and we were goofy and silly, and we borrowed wrestling onesies, but they were, like, from our friends from when they were, like, in, you know, years younger, like their middle school wrestling onesies. So we squeezed into these things. They're super tight, and we put, like, just giant rolled up socks in our crotches and down our legs, so we look like we have these huge hogs. And you know, we play the show like that, and is silly. But that's different, you know. I mean, first of all, we're simulating hog, and second, you know, I'm a grown man, allegedly, at this point, and it's different. It's fun. It's fun rock and roll. It's not serious Shakespeare. Look at my, you know, 15-year-old peen right now. I don't like that. I don't think anybody likes that. So that was it, and that was my foray, if you will, into the world of Shakespeare and tights. Not the way I necessarily wanted to make my high school play debut, but I did go on to be successful in that. And you know, those tights, I like to think they made me a better person, a better performer. You know, just elevated me overall for having gone through that experience, but no, totally didn't. All right, there you go. Yeah, I mean, tights aren't fun when you're young and dumb and full of insecurity. So thank you again for checking out the story this week, guys. Once again, I do want to let you know my new book, Scummer, is out from Grindhouse Press, coming up on 2 weeks of life now. And so if you haven't picked it up, why don't you help old Uncle Johnny out and get you a copy? And, you know, maybe while you're there, pick up a Death Pax and Left Hand Paths, or a Charge Land, or maybe a John Wayne Lied to You, or the Porn Star Retirement Plan, or Ann Poster. You know, I could go on all day. But, you know, Scummer's the new one. Pick it up. It's in the JohnWayneIsDead.com shop page. It is on Amazon. It is a Kindle version is available. And whatever you could do is very, very much appreciative. It helps me out as I'm on this experience and journey of trying to make myself a full-time writer and artist. It all helps, and I appreciate it. I just appreciate you listening to this podcast. To be quite honest with you, if you're doing that, I can't thank you enough. Please also check everything out that I have coming up on JohnWayneIsDead.com. All the shows are on the show page as far as John Wayne is Dead, the band, and then my appearances at cons that I have coming up for the next couple months. The new John Wayne is Dead record is out and available. I posted some links to stream it the other day. It's on Spotify and all the streaming stuff. So even if you just stream our record, you know, we get fractions of pennies for those. And those fractions of pennies, they add up, and they become millions of dollars over time. But we're all in this together. So anyway, thanks guys. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at John Wayne Is Dead, and on Facebook at my name, John Wayne Kamyanali. Thank you guys so much. Have a great week, and yeah, I'll see you on stage. I'll see you at the tights store. See you in tights.